I'm just so delighted to meet you, Chris. And I wanted to just, before we got too far, just tell you how thankful I am to have stumbled across your videos. I was in this place of just being so alone because I was in a little sangha. Nobody in my sangha was interested in my experience at all. So I couldn't really talk with them. I spoke with Shinsen Young for about an hour because he graciously gave an hour of his time when this first happened to me. I just was writing to people like, can you help me with this? I don't exactly know what's happening. And he sort of walked me through a little bit of those early stages, what that was. But it was really finding your videos because of this eye gaze thing that you were doing in your videos, like staring right in. And also the way you would look out onto the landscapes where you were. And I knew that look because that was the look that let me know, like, this guy knows what I'm experiencing. I had never seen it in anybody else, but the way you would look up and describe much later on in some videos, what non-duality kind of, what was the experience? What did it feel like? But it often had you kind of casting your gaze up. And I was like, you know, that recognition of the oneness is something that I could not find anybody else who really I felt understood what I where I was coming from, like how at that time quite mesmerizing it was to find one's essential self to be everywhere and having somebody say, yes, I understand. Or I am experiencing, I am that, right? So for those people who are out there who have no one, for me, this was just simply a godsend because I felt for the first time, for me, a lot of what you were saying, those early videos for me was a lifeline in some ways because there can be an extraordinarily profound aloneness. When the self drops away and there's still a bit of personhood there, it can feel solipsistic that I'm the only one here. And that one feels suffocating. I was so trapped initially in the oneness that there was almost a scurrying to get back. I would look up and watch as this body moved, but I did not move. I'm thinking to myself, when is this going to return back to just being able to look up and not experience non-duality? Because there was some part of it, while beautiful, that felt dangerous. It felt like a temptation to let the self entirely dissipate, like somebody says at the top of a cliff, I want you to just let yourself fall off. And there's just simply a voice in the clouds going, I've got you. And you're like, I don't know if I want to believe in that, right? Because there was a sense of just falling into nothingness. Then that idea of how is it that the seer, the seeing, and the seen are all experienced as one, and that whatever residual personhood is left can eventually claim no space up behind your eyeballs anymore, right? That it just simply goes to zero, and you're thinking what's left is just simply eyes that see, a brain that stores the memories. Because interestingly, we only ever look into the past. When you look up at the building, your brain says building. How does it know it's a building? It's stored in your brain. So we can't get past the labels. It's too automatic. It's stored in the brain. But we recognize there's something that is not part of that memory, right? And so the seeing without a seer, the hearing without a hearer, and what's left can be even just the last vestiges of it can really rear up and create a sense of no, the ego holding on so tightly to needing to survive this process, because what's on the other side of that feels like a drop off into an ocean of nothingness and everything. simultaneously, all mixed up in there, not knowing up from down and east from west, because there's no way to localize the self in any of this. The self is seen as everywhere simultaneously, but also empty, but also full. It will be exactly what you have always seen, but did not recognize was there. So it is a matter of shifting attention. Just that. We attend to what the contents of the mind. We just do not attend to the background. Now, somebody had said to me early on, there is a background that you cannot see, you cannot hear. Nothing can happen without there being a background, which is why to understand identification with change is also a deep understanding of that which does not change, because they're not two. Tall and short define one another. You can't have one. You can't have short without understanding tall. And you cannot have an identification of a self limited within a phenomenological world without also having a very deep and intimate understanding of the backdrop from which that emerges, although nobody has ever pointed one and said, turn your attention and flip it on itself. What is it that I know for certain? I can't speak to so much of what has filled books and the contents of other people's minds. I don't have that, right? You don't have that formal training. I don't have that formal training. So I can't speak to any of that. But what I know to be true is that my essential self is not limited to this mind and body. That is a direct experience. That is something I know to be true, or at least is perceived as true in my experience. So I know that. I can speak to that. There may be many other things people talk about. So I don't know. You know, I can't talk to you about quantum physics. That part of the dream, I don't have that knowledge about, but I can speak to this. And I think speaking to that is so important. So that's where I'm so inspired by what both you did for me, which is that you found a lost soul in this, you know, ether of somebody who's literally getting up and you're affecting their life. What you were doing was organizing my mornings to sit down, start clinical work later, so that I could sit and think carefully about what it was that you were saying, because I knew it to be the truth, because it was my truth. And in that, there was so much inspiration to dig deeper, to be able to say, the seeking might, some large portion of that seeking came to an end. I studied a lot of the great works for a decade or more, because I was very interested psychologically. And there's a prescription for the ending of suffering. And who better to master that than a clinical psychologist? We have people coming every day saying, I'm suffering. And I say, oh, by the way, there, I can be a Sherpa. I can help guide you, not by theories, but by direct experience. I can show you the way. I wrote to a random monk who wrote me back. And he said, when you can see yourself and all others and all others in the self, that is a sort of an important spiritual development. And of course, the ego loved that, right? The ego reared up and said, this jewel. And I felt like the Titanic with the big diamond. And you're just like, somebody says, don't lose it. Don't lose it. It's worth $100 million. Don't lose the jewel. Which can be probably the worst thing somebody can say to you.
I'd love to revisit what you said earlier, and I could let you just speak and speak and speak, because you speak about this so beautifully. And I think your way of pointing is so necessary, because these minds work in different ways. And you said, we know the way up the mountain, and it's so true, but different minds are at different places at the base of that mountain. And so different Sherpas, as you say, take different paths up and find different people along the way that are at different points on that mountain. And so it's so important that I'm so happy to finally have you speak about this because there's so many people around you that I'm sure can hear your specific way of pointing and identify with it and grab onto your tail as you walk up the mountain.
One of the lessons was that objects have presence, meaning that if you look at a lamp in the room or a chair in the room or a building or a mountain, you can sense its existence from afar.
You see presence as presence, not necessarily the presence of a separate object, but you just recognize a shared presence.
Yeah,
And
as
there's
the
no
object
separation.
divide, no separation. All of a sudden, just that. But I was unprepared as I had not developed the concentration skills and maybe the moral ethical side of it. You know, so that's how some people can have these initial awakenings and still be kicking the dog when they come home, you know, because it somehow is not embodied as an awakening that somehow finds its way into the heart space where every movement is initiated. From that place, how do I incorporate what just happened to me in some way then that brings the emptiness and the embodied peace together as one, not separate, not two? Right? So for me, all the reading about this being an illusion, right? Not real. Emptiness is what's real.
It's only
So,
halfway.
yeah. As you're going through this, you're realizing that is not the whole story.
And
This, me, I, you, I stab myself, you don't feel my pain, right? You are not me. You're you, I'm me. But our essential nature is no different, right? From that point of view, I am me and you are you, only from that point of view. So getting full circle, some people do, the mountain again returns to not me, not part of me. The mountain is again separate. The teacup is again separate. The bird is separate. But very few people, and I don't count myself yet amongst them, get full circle to the point where there is a flip, where what is perceived as oneness somehow flips, it reverts. Because oneness is a concept, right? And this is neither unified nor dualistic. So to really have a direct experience where the absolute and the relative merge is something that the vast majority of people will never ever experience because they stop. And I think, you know, I've thought about implications, people like you and me who may teach a little bit about awakening.
I'd love to speak to this. So you said earlier, post awakening, there was a sense of isolation or loneliness, and that's so common. And I'd love to speak to that really quick in the little time that we have left because it's a very important point to address. It's almost like walking through a silent disco where everybody has kind of headphones on, or walking through, a movie theater and everybody's staring at the movie. And so you can feel a little bit alone, being like, well, why is everybody just so captivated by this? Why is everybody so captivated by what they're seeing, sensing, hearing, all these sensory inputs? It's like your entire sense of being is wrapped up in something that isn't necessarily their authentic self. And so as you walk through or alongside people that are captivated by these things, there can be a sense of isolation. But coming full circle, as you've said, is the recognition that that fundamental essence that's wrapped up in these identities, that's wrapped up in these sort of senses, these sensory inputs, is this same nature. And as you recognize this, there's a compassion that comes up for it. It's the same nature is appearing as that which is entangled. And so even that is fully recognized and fully reconciled as this purity of being, just appearing as that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so, like for example, somebody said, how is it that you can have a relationship with somebody who has no interest in non-duality or spirituality? And it's so easy because it's all just the same essence. It's all just the same nature, just appearing differently. There's no difference in it. It just looks a little
And
different.
Maharshi would say, you know, famously said, well, there are no others, right?
True. That's an ultimate pointing, but
right?
Yeah.
Yes. But so if you
very
get
few
that,
will get
you
that.
realize like there is no separation between me and that, and therefore.
And this is why life is truly a lesson in love.
Yeah.
Pure awareness
Yeah.
is unconditional love. It
Yeah.
accepts all things as already what it is.
Yeah. Which is why people don't necessarily have to have an awakening experience to adopt a position of unconditional love, unconditional, truly, unconditional love to self and others as life arises, that is akin to, there's an equal sign there. People who awaken and experience that the gaps that we often associate with separateness fill with love, and the love is here, the love extends out, and love in sort of wraps itself around or enshrouds everything else, and therefore there's a continuity of that love. But for somebody who doesn't experience that, who decides to go out into the world and say, if I will begin loving myself unconditionally, forgiving everything that comes up and swaddling that within a loving, kind, empathic, warm, forgiving stance, that is ultimately what somebody who may have had that awakening experience will do and will dedicate their life to doing, which is ensuring that that love spreads, that each moment that we're here is a bowing down and honoring the love that exists in this world, the love that brings two people together, the love that allows us to see one another, our partners, our betrothed, you know, the people we marry. You know, it's, what is that? It's being seen. When somebody is fully seen unconditionally, we call that love, right? So when we see life as it is, not as we imagine it to be, we fall in love with life. We fall in love with all people, all circumstances. Everything is grist, including illness and war and violence and all of this, because it is simply about how will we respond to what we see. Will we create divisions again in the mind? I don't like that. The ego coalesces again. I don't think that's right. The ego coalesces again. How can we experience that and respond in a way that allows love to maintain the connectedness to every life experience, no matter how horrific that may be, and how incensing that may be to a separate sense of ego, that how could you love war? How could you love violence? How could you, right? I didn't say we condone it. I didn't say we're there, we help, we try to, but the idea of it is inspired by, informed by, and ultimately an extension of the love that exists within us. How we go about doing that, right? So that's
war only begets more war.
Yeah.
And it's time for humanity to try something different. And this is the other choice.
One person at a time.
There can be pure devotion to this, as you've said, without pure recognition.
Yeah.
And it's just as good.
Yeah, just as good. Chris, it was wonderful, wonderful.
Love you so much, David. Thank you so much. We'll do this again and I'll upgrade. I'll actually buy Zoom so we don't get caught off in the middle for next time.
That would be great.
All right. All right. Till next time, David. Thanks so much.